there again, and welcome to Musings on Golf, where today we'll hear great stories from the incomparable and very stylish Michelle McGann, who has overcome so much in her life to have such a terrific career. My name is Kelly Elbin, along with Bob Bupka. Bob, we spent some time with Michelle. She had diabetes when she was young, but that hardly kept her from having a terrific career on the LPGA Tour and to continue to give back to the game today.
Well said, Kelly. We're very proud to have Michelle McGann on Musings on Golf. Just a super nice human being and very, very talented. And as you accurately pointed out, Mr. Elbin, a very stylish way of winning on the LPGA. Good person, Michelle McGann.
Yeah, I think so. I use the terms for her stylish and style and substance. I mean, there's a lot of substance to her and the lives that she's affected in such a positive way through her foundation. People who've been having to battle with diabetes. I mean, for goodness sakes, Bob, she was only 13 years old when she was told she had diabetes. She, as you'll learn, she made a decision to become a professional as opposed to going to college, in large part because of her health. She carries on. It's all about the spirit that she brings to her passion for the game. You can't help but like Michelle McGann and the hats. You got to love those hats. I would love to see you, by the way, with one of those Michelle McGann hats on, Bob.
Well, incidentally, I think I'm the only radio announcer alive that got paid to wear a hat.
And yes,
I did have a 2-year contract with Town Talk Hats, and I got paid to wear that hat. Of course, it was a straw hat and rather stylish, I must say, back in the day. But when I tell people, yeah, I got paid to wear a hat, they look at me like when I tell them, oh yeah, I do golf on the radio. Both those don't make any sense, but they were reality to me.
Well, the reality to Colin Morikawa is that he won the Zozo Championship in Japan over the weekend. But before we get to Colin, I also want to talk about Eric Cole, who was the runner-up there. The game of golf lost yet another huge figure in Betsy Rawls. She won 55 times, Bob, on the LPGA Tour, eight major championships. And had a tournament in her name for years and years. Kathy Whitworth is going to go into the PGA of America Hall of Fame in a couple weeks in Frisco. And when you think about players of that level, of Kathy Whitworth, Betsy Rawls is right up there.
Yeah, I think Betsy Rawls duly deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And I'm sure the PGA of America will very soon welcome in Betsy Rawls. What a terrific talent, what a terrific person, what a gracious ambassador for the sport of golf. She not only won, but she did it the right way.
Yeah, she did, and the right way certainly for Colin Morikawa in Japan at the Zozo over the weekend. Bob, it had been, I hadn't realized he hadn't won in a couple of years, and it was, you think of how good a ball striker he is. It was almost kind of it doesn't make any sense that he wouldn't have won a golf tournament in 2 years. A route where he and his caddy, J.J. Jakovec, spent 2.5-3 hours on the putting green, practice putting green, the day before the tournament, and they found something. And he went out and putted like crazy. And when you get a ball striker like that, and he starts making all the putts, he's pretty darn tough to beat. Now, he wouldn't tell the media what those changes were. I don't think I would either, Bob. But welcome back to the winner's circle, Colin Morikawa. It's where you belong.
Yeah, he's a good guy, 2-time major champion, and really down to earth, a guy, a player that when you watch him on TV, you're proud that he's an American, and you're proud of the way he conducts himself both on the golf course and off the golf course. Congratulations. I think maybe this victory is going to prove a big stepping stone for the upcoming season.
Yeah, I think so. Also, so much, and for obvious reasons, we focus on the guys and the ladies who win. But Eric Cole, the runner-up at the Zozo, What a year this has been for a 35-year-old rookie. Eric is the son of Laura Ball and the great South African player Bobby Cole. And Bob, just the numbers alone. I mean, he almost won the Honda Classic here in my neck of the woods, lost in a playoff to Chris Kirk back in the spring. But he finished 43rd on the FedEx points for the year. That's the best of any in the rookie class. 8 top 25 finishes, 3 top 10 finishes. Made the cut in 26 of 36 events that he played in. And in his 3 events that he's played in this FedEx Cup Fall Series, 4th at the Fortinet Championship, tied for 3rd at the Shriners Children's Open, and then tied for 2nd at Zozo. Eric Cole, my goodness gracious, what a rookie year.
Well, that certainly explains why Laura Ball's feet have not touched the ground in about 3 or 4 months. She's so proud of her son. And as Laura tells it, he's a far better son than he is a professional golfer. And that's a very nice compliment coming from his mother.
Yeah, Nino Echevarria and Vincent Norman have been the two rookies so far to win on the PGA Tour this year. But even with that, as of right now, I think we have 3 Fall Series events left. I think Eric is the guy when it comes to Rookie of the Year. Bob, I'm really looking forward to our listeners having the opportunity to hear from Michelle McGann. And as we head into break, you're going to hear a special word from a brand new sponsor. We're delighted to welcome William & Harry as the newest sponsor of Musings on Golf. William & Harry has launched a line of stylish, waterproof golf shoes, and they are incredibly comfortable, folks. The WH golf shoe is made of deerskin and suede. It has a gel insert, a form-fitting inner lining, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes on the outside of each shoe provide maximum performance. It's time to elevate your game. It's time to go to williamandharry.com.
When you make the best performing golf balls in the world, your biggest competition is yourself. And now the golf ball that sets the standard for every other has raised the bar again. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. You know, Bob, whenever I think of Michelle McGann, I think of one of our game's great ambassadors. 7 times she won on the LPGA Tour. But far more than that, she continues to give back to golf in so many ways. Just recently, for example, she participated in a breast cancer awareness event at my club here in Florida. And the Michelle McGann Fund continues to really touch many lives through golf. 2023 marks her 34th year on the LPGA and Legends Tour tours, and her passion for the game and people have never been stronger. Michelle McGann, welcome to Musings on Golf.
Good morning, guys. Great to be with you. And fabulous day yesterday, by the way. It was amazing. I just made a brief comment to everyone that at this point in our lives, you know, I've played great golf. I've played some not so great golf. But the main goal is to continue to help make a difference in people that are less fortunate. You know, we all deal with something in our lives. I feel like I try to be the best role model that I can to all those diabetics out there. And, you know, everybody helping everybody is the way our world gets better.
Hi, Michelle. Bob Boepke here. And thanks for joining us. And how'd the hat situation come about? Were you always intrigued by wearing nice hats?
Well, great to be with you again, Bob. Listen, the hats kind of came about as an accident. I did not have a hat sponsor, a visor contract to represent any company at the time. And I remember going to the Open in Dallas. I was playing really well. I had just had one of my best finishes at the LPGA Championship at DuPont. And I had a few extra dollars and I thought I would go to the mall. Great mall in Dallas. And next thing you know, I found myself in a Laura Ashley store, and found 2 really cute, just plain straw hats with a red ribbon on one of them, and the other had a green ribbon. And I thought to myself, I think I have both these colors of shirts, or I can make an outfit out of this. I'm going to buy these hats. Maybe they were $30, $40. And I'm going to give it a go this week and see how they look. And I was staying with Marley and Floyd, and I brought them back to the house, and I said, what do you think, Marlene? She, and you know, and her sweet little voice, and oh, they're adorable. You look darling. And I thought, okay, well, let's go. Let's do this. And I remember kind of peeking my head outside the locker room thinking, oh my gosh, what is somebody going to say? I was, you know, very self-conscious and just thought, well, let's just do it. It's going to protect my face. It was record heat in Dallas that week too. So it was more protection as well as something just a little different. It was never meant, I never bought them with the intention of drawing more attention to myself, that's for sure. But strictly to protect my face from the sun and maybe, you know, get a little bit more shade from the heat. So it just kind of took off from there. And now if I don't have a hat on, people, you know, get disappointed and want to know, where's your hat? Where's your hat? So I always joke, if I had a penny for every time somebody asked me that, I'd be a multimillionaire right now. But
that's amazing. So much came out of so little. One thing I want to talk to you about, Michelle, because I share the same thing. I have diabetes and been fighting it for quite a long while. But I know that most of your life, you had to learn to deal with diabetes. I think you were 13 years old. And what were those first few years like battling this ugly disease?
Well, I have had diabetes for 40 years now. And I remember I was 13. I was in seventh grade. And my mom was away on a seminar on diabetes Mother's Day weekend and came home and told my dad that, you know, I was diabetic. And he said, you're crazy. You've been learning about it, you know, all weekend. There's no way. And she said, I'm telling you, she's got diabetes. I can smell the ketones on her breath. And I went to her doctors the doctor she worked for the next day. And we couldn't even get a number, you know, the ketones in my urine, because we didn't have finger sticks then. And so the number was off the charts, and I went right to the hospital. And I remember lying in the bed thinking, what is diabetes? I have no idea. Does this mean, like, can I still play golf? I remember sitting there asking that question. And what does that mean when I make the turn from playing nine holes and stopping with the kids and having a Mountain Dew and a piece of pizza? You know, can that still happen? And, you know, first reaction was absolutely, you can continue to play golf. And we'll just have to, you know, figure out about the Mountain Dew and the pizza, but we'll figure something out. And, you know, you look back on that now, and, you know, my mom had to figure out how much insulin I needed depending on, you know, a urine test. And now to where I have a 24-hour continuous glucose monitor that will give me my blood sugar every 5 seconds, it changes. And so the technology has improved greatly, as in every industry, golf, going from, you know, one type of shaft that we grew up playing with to, you know, many, many, many shafts. And I think we all of us that live with diabetes, we are hoping every day you wake up and you think, is this going to be the day there's going to be a breakthrough, that, you know, there could be a cure? Because, you know, the equipment we have, the tools we have now to manage our life are wonderful, but wouldn't it be great to wake up and not have to take any insulin at all? So we keep working towards that, and hoping that the researchers get closer and closer every day. And I hope that in my lifetime that I will see a cure.
So very well said, Michelle. Cal, what do you got?
Well, indeed, we're so pleased to be joined with Michelle McGinn here on Musings on Golf. Hey, Michelle, you hear the stories, you read the stories about the kids who walk into a major league ballpark for the first time with mom or mom and dad, and how cool it is, and smell the grass and the green and so forth. For you, at age 7, it sounds like that was a very similar experience the first time you ever played golf with your dad, with the smell of the grass, the big green golf course. I would imagine even today, looking back, it's still a very fond memory, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, my dad was a great athlete, played basketball at Notre Dame, and just loved golf. He taught himself how to play, and he was a scratch golfer. So to go out and just kind of, I started on an executive golf course, which was, I think, a huge advantage. And I love every time I go to a new golf course and they have a par three, because I was able to get success immediately, make a par. It wasn't a struggle. So anytime I see that or forward tees on golf courses, I think it's wonderful, because you know, any sport you play, any activity you engage in, you know, everybody wants to have a little bit of success, whether it's a lot in the beginning or just a little. It's that encouragement that you get to keep going. And I think that's what kept me going. I loved playing. I loved going to this golf course. They were like family to me, and, you know, would take me out and we would go play, and, you know, it'd be dark and my mom and dad would come get me. So it was an amazing childhood, learning how to play. And like I said, just getting a little bit of success, you know, kind of made me want more and more. And, you know, I'll be forever grateful for that opportunity and the sacrifice that, you know, my parents made for that to happen. I'm helping my little niece right now. She just turned 10. And so I see so much of, you know, she's a little bit more outgoing than I was at mm-hmm. that age. You know, life is different. Obviously, these generations now, with all the social media and, you know, phones, we didn't have any of that. So I think, you know, that makes a big difference. But just to see her love and want to go do it and say, hey, Aunt Shell, can you take me? And then to see other girls. I mean, I see so many girls out practicing and playing now compared to, you know, 1978, you know, when I was the only girl out there hitting, you know, hitting balls, playing with all the guys, which was fine. You know, it made me a better player. But it's so wonderful to see so many young ladies out there playing, and we just need to keep encouraging them.
Yeah, you're right. I see three sisters who are all in their teen years who are out at my club here playing all the time, and they seem to love it. And their development as players at a young age, it's pretty remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's amazing, you know. And that's what I tell Blair and you know, all these other little girls, you know, listen, learn the basics right off the bat. Don't develop bad habits, because they're really hard to break and they're really easy to pick up. So, you know, even when I'm doing clinics, you know, start with the basics, grips, stance, alignment, posture, and, you know, the transfer of the weight is the biggest thing that, you know, gets the ball moving in the right direction.
Absolutely. And speaking of a direction, you made a big decision after an incredibly successful high school career. You won the 87 U.S. Girls Junior, 3 Florida State Junior Championships. You decided not to go to college. You decided to tackle the LPGA going through the Q School. You went through it. You made it on your first try and joined. I think you were 19. Why didn't you go to college? Were you close to accepting, I think, what, University of Miami offered you a scholarship? Why did you decide to turn professional?
Well, yeah, I was player of the year my senior year. And I could have gone to any school I wanted to. I had full rides to anywhere that I would have liked to have gone. And the reason I turned pro was I was on experimental medicine for my diabetes. And I was on that for 5 years. I went to London, Ontario, the University Hospital in Canada, and I got a experimental drug that I was on, and I didn't take insulin for 5 years. So that medicine was not helping my diabetes anymore. It was toxic to my kidneys. I had a kidney biopsy. And it just overall was not, you know, my blood sugars were not in control anymore where they were in those 5 years. So coming off of the medicine, going back on insulin, you had a lot of question marks. The doctors weren't quite sure what your life expectancy would be. You know, listen, it was experimental, you know, nobody knew. And so there was an opportunity. I could try it. I could forego college and try to make it on the tour. That was a goal, a dream. Never realizing if you had to plan it out, that's the way my life would go. But we, you know, myself with my parents chose that path. And fortunately, I made it, you know, I made it on the tour on my first try. And not to say that year was not a struggle. You go from being the best player to, you know, the lowest fish on the totem pole and traveling, you know, week after week. And, you know, it's something that you have to go through to experience, to explain to anybody how tough it was. And especially, you know, we didn't have phones. We had ran maps, you know, we had to figure everything out. You didn't have these big sponsors like players have coming out on tour now. And just it was different. And my parents, you know, sacrificed for me to live out my dream. You know, would I change it if I had to do it again? Well, probably not. You know, you kind of have to go with your gut. You know, I learned a lot. I do now know that if you want to be a college coach, you have to have a college degree. So not knowing that possibly could have been something that my future might hold, that's definitely off the list now, because to go back to school for 4 years and, you know, give up a lot of other things, I'm not sure that that's going to be possible. But, you know, my path is what I chose. I don't, you know, everybody's situation is different. People, you know, like you asked that question, now people know, had a lot to do with my health. I was a good enough player. I had to learn once I got out there, but slowly but surely, you know, confidence, you build it up again. And, you know, I had a good run there for a while. And now at 53, I'm enjoying playing some Legends events and fortunate enough to have an Open and an LPGA Championship. And our Legends Tour is adding a lot more events every year. I've got another one in a couple weeks in Tampa. So we're trying to grow to make a difference for, you know, the next generation to come, like we did on the LPGA. I think that my generation of playing with Betsy King and Pat Bradley, Patty Sheehan, Nancy Lopez, Beth Daniel, Meg Mellon, I mean, Jane Geddes, Dottie Pepper, I think the list goes on and on, and that's just Americans. Helen Alfredson, Lisa Lott-Neumann, I mean, Laura Davies. I think our generation definitely made a better life for the girls playing now. And, you know, the founders that started our tour, I mean, I think that gets lost a little bit, that, you know, we weren't even on television, so now we're on television. And I think that, you know, like I said, our generation made a lot of that happen. So I think we left the tour a better place than we found it. And I hope these girls now continue to build it and keep that in mind.
You touched upon it briefly, Michelle, but what was it like playing on the LPGA Tour at 19 years old. And do you remember where your first event was?
Well, the first event was in Lake Worth or Boca. I can't remember. But it was in Florida, not far from the house. So talk about playing with a little bit of pressure. You just turned 19 and you went from, you know, winning the Doherty Championship, the amateur event a year before that, to now playing on the LPGA. It was a big eye opener. I remember, you know, maybe making $11,000, just under 12, spending probably 40 or 50 for expenses. Just a real struggle, but and having going back to tour school that year, and then getting conditional status, so then I had to play my way to get exempt status, and then after that it kind of I just got better and better every year, but definitely a struggle. I couldn't rent a car. I didn't know where to stay. You're learning new places, you know, you're booking airline tickets. That's when we had paper tickets. Certainly, you know, you had to remember to bring those. And it just, you know, everything about tour life, you had to learn.
Were your parents out there with you for at least for some of the events?
Oh yeah. So somebody always was with me because I couldn't rent a car. So, and you're a rookie, so you're learning everything new, like, hey, where do we go? Where do we stay? Where do we eat? Do we have a fact sheet? You know, I mean, fact sheets are on the internet now and you pull everything right up, you know, then you had paper sheets and when is it coming out and how long do I have to wait? And, you know, things are just really, really different. Yeah. You know, okay, turn right here. Nope, now you got to make a left up at that sign. And I don't know the road's name, but just follow this path. And it's just to know that we've come so far with our technology would have made our lives so much easier on tour. But listen, I don't regret any of it. I had wonderful times with my parents. My brother caddied for me. We won 4 times together. My dad and I won twice. So it's been an amazing career for me, and you know, it's fun playing some of these extra events now, and a lot of them are team events too, which is even more fun.
You know, Michelle, I remember back, I was calling play-by-play while you were playing, and you were playing very well in a U.S. Open. I was up by the green, you hit an approach shot that looked perfect to me. I described it on the air as perfect. But little did I know, it lands on a sprinkler head, goes over the green, and leads to, I believe, a double bogey, and that was that for that U.S. Open. Do you still have that sprinkler head?
You know, I have that sprinkler head tucked away somewhere. And the crazy thing about that, I was playing really well that week, and I had worked on my little pitch and run shot. I remember hitting, it was an 8-iron. And I remember thinking, oh, I got this shot. This is what I've been working on. And as soon as it left the club face, I was like, that's going to be perfect. And I didn't even see that sprinkler head there, to be honest with you. And next thing you know, it hits the sprinkler head, goes, you know, 10, 15 feet in the air and back in a bunker where I can't even see the pin now. So I go from hitting it there in 2 to get up and down for birdie to, you know, moving ahead in the right direction to, you know, making double. It was just a huge, like, oh, deflate of the balloon for sure. That was an open that probably I could have won, would have made a big difference. Well, at the time, it probably would have. To say you have another title, to have a major would have been awesome. But, you know, you live, you learn, you know, I hit it like I wanted to. It was the rub of the green. Maybe did I pay more attention to sprinkler heads from that point on? Probably. But it was just, you know, like inches, literally inches, that that ball, you know, and then it could have been, you know, a kick in versus, you know, getting just a really bad lie in the back bunker and not being able to get that up and down. So you live and learn, but that definitely, yeah, it feels like it just happened yesterday.
Starting to wind down with Michelle McGann here on Musings on Golf. And while that was not a high point by any means, the singles match in 96 in the Solheim Cup, when you beat Laura Davies, I have to imagine has to be one of the highlights of your career. That was in Wales. I think that was your only Solheim Cup appearance. Is that correct?
I was on the team in 94, but I was an alternate. That was before they took alternates away. But so I was actually on two teams. I don't seem to ever get any credit for that, but I was on that team. I got everything that every other player did except a chance to compete in it. I think they did away with it the next year. They did away with alternates, but yeah. So that shot that I hit in Wales, I remember being in the team room and they were getting ready to announce, you know, we had turned in our lineup for Sunday singles and we were getting ready to get the Europeans. And I remember all the girls saying, "Oh gosh, we hope you get Laura. You're the only one that can hit it with her and, you know, keep up with her." And I was like, why is everybody afraid of her? She's a nice person. She's just a, you know, she was number one in the world at the time. And we are in England. So we definitely were outnumbered as far as fans go. And sure enough, you know, the list came out and I was up against Laura. And, you know, great respect always to Laura Davies. Plays with true class. I hit this 3-wood on the 16th hole. It was a par 3, and I hit it to probably about 4 or 5 feet, and it might have been one of the best 3-woods I've hit in my life. Right at it. I mean, had a chance. You know, you're looking at it thinking it had a chance to go in, and Laura hit a 2-iron and hit it right, and you know, didn't hit her second shot very well. Hit her third shot on the green, but had a lengthy putt and actually just conceded the hole. So I ended up winning 3-up with 2 to go. And it was kind of like that domino effect. You know, they say that, you know, you get a little bit of the red going and all of a sudden it was just like, boom, they saw that I had beat her. I think Pat Bradley was ahead of me and Val Skinner maybe. And I think one of them might have won, maybe the other one lost, but I think we had at least one point, I think, on the board and in mine, and we needed to win, I think, almost every one of our matches, or close to win the cup. So it was amazing. My parents were there, and it just was one of the best memories. I have my uncle ended up taking my name and the from the scoreboard that night. And so I have it framed and it's in our trophy room, and, you know, one that I do look at often and feel that was one of my greatest moments in my career. And, you know, to be part of a winning team and, you know, you can't put enough emphasis on what it is to represent your country. That's for sure.
Michelle, it's been an absolute thrill to get to spend some time with you. But before we close, tell us about the Michelle McGann Fund and the great work that you're doing.
Well, thanks for that. My husband and I started a fund to help kids get educated about diabetes and to be around kids with diabetes. So we are able to send kids to diabetes camp throughout the summer through our fund. And we've been able to send consistently over the last few years over 200 kids all over the country. We started locally to help our camps here locally, and it has grown to where we're able to send kids, like I said, all over the country to learn, to be with other kids, to experience normal life with other kids living with diabetes. We get thank you notes saying that was just an amazing week. We had so much fun, and fun and diabetes really are, they don't go together. So it makes us feel so great. We have such wonderful people that have donated, who have supported our organization for a long time to make this possible. So we continue to do that. We've taken a couple years off from our tournament. Hopefully we bring it back next year, but really proud of all the, you know, all the lives we've been able to touch and help, and, you know, just make their life a little bit better, knowing that they're not the only ones living with this disease.
Just goes to prove Michelle McGann, a stellar on the golf course, but an outstanding person off the course, and we wish you luck with that endeavor. Michelle McGann, thank you for being a special guest here on Musings on Golf, and hope to catch up with you down the road.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course, and that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoe from William & Harry. I love these golf shoes. They're made of deerskin and suede with a soft gel insert and reinforced hardened soft spikes that increase stability and balance, and they are so incredibly comfortable. I invite you to head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best and play your best with William & Harry. Bob, I've already got my pair of the William & Harry deerskin and suede shoes. We've got to make sure we get you a pair. You, even if you're just walking around the house, you're going to look great.
Well, I'm happy that you got your pair because, you know, if you can't play well, at least you're going to look well wearing the William & Harry's.
No question about it. We thank Michelle McGann. Bob, really enjoyed that interview. She is, to me, as we both have said, she's a great ambassador to the game. And talk about overcoming an obstacle that a lot of people wouldn't have been able to make a great career and continue to touch a lot of lives.
And she certainly does. And from somebody that suffers from diabetes myself, I know what an extended effort Michelle McGann has to go through just to get 18 holes of golf in, and to do it at the highest level, really tremendous.
So we thank Michelle McGann. Next week, you're going to learn a lot about what it's like for life on the PGA Tour, LPGA Tour, Champions Tour, for reps who follow the tour. Brad Adams is going to be our guest. Brad is with a company called Bloodline, a really cool putter company. He was heavily involved with Odyssey, and Brad is also the son of a gentleman named Gary Adams, who started a little company called TaylorMade many moons ago. Brad Adams up next week. My good friend Bob Bubka wearing those deerskin and suede shoes. I'm Kelly Elbin. Thanks for joining us on Musings on Golf.